All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman, and today we are breaking down the latest on the new CBA negotiations, like talking about an expanded playoff format, as well as a 17-game season and what all that means for the Atlanta Falcons.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So, guys, you know me, I'm Aaron Freeman. Been covering the Falcons for many years. I'm on Twitter at FalcFans and, of course, the host of this preeminent Locked On Falcons podcast, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast. And today I was originally going to be like, okay, well, we talked about the re-signing of Ryan Allen on yesterday's show. We need to do a sort of full show to celebrate the legacy of Matt Bosher now that he is almost certainly not going to be playing for the Falcons anymore. But I guess we'll just have to punt that, ooh, pun intended, to the tomorrow's episode, just because of the quote unquote big breaking news about the possibility of a vote on a new CBA that dropped on Wednesday afternoon / evening, depending on your time zone. That's something that's worthy of discussion, given that at least the media seems to be implying that a vote is imminent and we might have a new collective bargaining agreement. So with that said, let's talk about the possibility of the expanded playoff format that could wind up happening as early as 2020 as your Locked On Falcons lead story. And then later we'll get into the conversation about the 17-game season expansion, which we touched upon briefly in the ultimate divisional crossover last week, but we'll go a little bit deeper on that. And then later on in the episode, we will get into sort of what a new CBA does in the case of the Falcons and how that may have a domino effect for their offseason, and particularly with their salary cap situation. So stay tuned to that, but let's get into that lead story. Various media outlets like ESPN are now reporting that playoff expansion from 12 to 14 teams is part of the new proposal and the latest round of negotiations for the new collective bargaining agreement between the NFL owners and players. That 17 playoff format for each conference could start as early as 2020. Under a new format, that would mean that the top seed in each conference would get a bye week rather than the top two seeds, as has been the case over the last few decades with the current playoff format. Looking back over the last couple of seasons and looking at several of the teams that would have wound up qualifying for this new proposed playoff format as that seventh seed, we would have seen an 8-8 team qualify for the playoffs two times over the last 5 years. Those two teams would have been last year's Pittsburgh Steelers team as the presumptive seventh seed in the AFC. And of course, the 2015 Atlanta Falcons also would have gotten in and likely got waxed by the Arizona Cardinals in the opening round of that year's playoffs. In terms of my opinion on this new proposal for an expanded playoff, I'm not really for or against this. I do certainly think it dilutes a playoff field. I think every now and then, like would have been the case over the last couple of years, you would get an 8-8 team and possibly even a 7-9 team if circumstances allowed in the playoffs. I'm not necessarily a huge fan of that, but at the same time, I'm not necessarily in a mindset of like this is something that can't work moving forward. Generally speaking, when you look at other sort of playoff formats with football, particularly the college playoff, I'm generally against expansion there just because. And the main reason is I think the NFL has a lot more parity than college does in sort of the 2-7 seed matchup that you would get in the NFL. I think is a lot more compelling most years than you would get in a college sort of format, because I think the way that college is working, that typically there's like 2 or 3 teams at the top pretty much every single year that you're really saying, okay, that team's one of these teams is going to win the national title and everybody else is just an also ran. And I don't feel like that's always the case in the NFL. It always seems like that list is a lot bigger than that number. And there's always the potential for upsets just because the qualitative difference between, you know, the first and the seventh best team in each conference isn't as substantial as it would be at the college level. So again, generally I'm kind of neutral to this. I'm sure every three or four years, you would get a particularly compelling game or matchup with an expanded playoff format. And it's not really a thing that I think adds a whole lot or takes a whole lot away. Certainly you can make the argument that it kind of screws over the number two seed by them not getting a bye week, but I don't necessarily have a strong enough take on that in terms of thinking that the two seed deserves a bye. It's just one of those things where I believe the current playoff format was adopted in 1990. It's basically the only playoff format that I've known. And so because that's the way it's been, that's the way it should be. And it's the old adage of if it ain't broke, don't fix it. But I always feel like, as I've said previously on the podcast, I feel like, you know, it's time for the NFL to shake things up. And at least as far as the proposals and the possible changes that the league could make under this new collective bargaining agreement, I feel like this is the one that I could probably get the most behind. And that other big one is sort of the expansion to a 17-game regular season. And I just don't know if that one flies as much. So this is probably the lesser of two evils, if you want to label them as such. So we will continue to talk specifically about the expansion to a 17-game regular season and whether or not this new CBA agreement is exactly imminent, because it seems like it's not, but we'll get into that a little bit later. But in addition to my thoughts on this whole topic, I'm sure you can go check out the Locked On NFL podcast hosted by Brian Peacock and former NFL scout Matt Williamson to get their thoughts on all the latest going on in the league, as well as this specific topic, on your favorite podcast platform, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. So really, it seems like the CBA kind of boils down to 17 games, which the 17 game regular season format won't start in 2020, but it could start in 2021 at the earliest. And at least based off of the articles and reports I'm reading, you know, the NFL owners could vote as early as this week, as early as today, I believe, as you guys are listening to this, or maybe it's next Thursday, but it's a Thursday when they meet in New York for an update on the current proposal, and they just need 75% of the owners to approve in order for it to pass. Then you would have to have the players vote on it, and you would need to get 67% approval. And the reports are suggesting that the players could vote on it as early as Friday, when they have sort of like a conference call to discuss sort of the progress of where they're at, particularly on the counter proposals. And, you know, it seems like to me there's a lot more moving parts, at least with the players, as far as the counter proposals go. You know, it sounds like the main concession that the NFL is giving up in order to allow this move to 17 games, you know, you give a little, we take a little, that sort of dynamic. It seems like they're just giving the players a little bit of a larger share of the revenue, where it's going from like 47% to like 48.5% of the revenue, in addition to them raising minimum salaries by 25%. But if my math is correct, that revenue sharing only would, at least this past year, would have only increased the cap by like $6 million. And then if you had raised the minimum salaries by the number that they're proposing, that probably would have eaten into that, to the point that it only would have given teams roughly like a few million more to spend in terms of salary cap space. So at least from my perspective, and again, maybe my math is wrong, because I've seen figures out there that are saying like, oh, it would give the players an extra $5 billion. But I think that's $5 billion over 10 years. And that's only based off of the like long-term projections on how much revenue the NFL is going to be creating by the end of this collective bargaining agreement in, you know, 2027, 2030 type of thing, not necessarily what they would get in 2020 or 2021. But you know, it seems like to me, like these concessions are pretty much the minimal, the least the owners could potentially offer. And at least it sounds like, from what I've heard in previous reports, that suggest that a large percentage of players are not necessarily happy with these concessions. And I think they have every right to do so. And like, I tweeted this out early in February, like 2-3 weeks ago. And sort of the idea was like, you know, if I was the players, this is sort of the concessions I would want as part of my agreeing to expand the regular season to 17 games. And sort of I listed expanding the rosters to like, I think it's 70 players, adding an additional bye week, dropping Thursday games, with the exception of probably Thanksgiving, getting rid of franchise tag, not allowing drug testing for marijuana anymore, and having a bigger piece of the revenue pie. Now, I put 80% revenue at that time, knowing that that was an outrageous number, but it was kind of, at least in my mind, the logic I was using for putting that out there, not because I thought it was realistic, but just kind of the idea of like, oh, I give you six proposals, five of them are reasonable and one of them is outrageous, and you only focus on the one outrageous one, which is that 80% revenue share, rather than the other five. And so the other five look a lot more reasonable in retrospect, and so you can get those under the radar, and ultimately you wind up settling for like 50% or something like that revenue share, and then you get the other five things passed. That was at least my mindset when I threw that number out there, because I just wanted it to be sort of ridiculous. But you know, the other thing I will say is, like, I look at it, I'm like, if all the players get is like an additional 1.5% in terms of revenue, which, you know, certainly is not a small amount of money considering how much money the NFL makes. I think, you know, I saw some figure that, you know, overall revenue like 2 years ago was like $15 billion. I've seen projections that say they want to get it up to like $27 billion by like 2027 or 2025 or something like that. So again, you know, 1.5% of that is a significant amount of money. But then when you start to divvy it up between all the teams and all the players, it's really not that much amount of money, you know, per player. And it's really not a significant amount of money. And so to me, it's like, you got to get a bigger concession if you're the players at this point in time. Now, this is the one opportunity, you know, I think probably of those six proposals I gave, besides the revenue thing, probably the most controversial one that I probably put out there was the drug testing one. And, you know, this gives me the rare opportunity I will have on this podcast to talk about marijuana on this podcast. You know, don't do drugs, kids. But, you know, I think the NFL's marijuana policy is kind of anachronistic, a little bit outdated, when you consider that the Olympic standards for what's a positive test or not is significantly higher than what an NFL standards are. You're living in a country that is in the midst of an opioid crisis. And certainly, you know, many people have made arguments that say, you know, more usage of marijuana would help curb some of that stuff, because you would have less people being prescribed to narcotics, essentially, and opioids. And, you know, marijuana could replace that and is non-habit forming, unlike, you know, Oxycontin and whatnot. But, you know, and then you look at the fact that marijuana is legal in like 10 states, including 10 states that I believe 8 NFL teams currently play in. And then there's another like 8 or so teams that play in states where medical marijuana is legal, and marijuana is also decriminalized. And, you know, you're looking at this push in this country right now, you know, if you're not Jeff Sessions, but, you know, this push in this country to at least legalize medical marijuana, decriminalize marijuana in throughout, you know, the 50 states. And by the time we, you know, 5-10 years from now, I think it will be, you know, that push will continue to move forward. That's why I feel like the NFL is behind the times. So there's my, you know, stance on that. You know, I probably won't get too many opportunities to talk about it on a podcast. So I had to jump at the chance. But like the last thing I'll say is, before we start getting into the Falcons part of this conversation, is like, you know, I've been very skeptical that a deal would get done by March 18th. I've, you know, you can certainly say that maybe I'm biased in sort of refusing to see the light here, but it just seems like, I don't know, for me, the media, you know, with this report that came out Wednesday, it seems like, I think this is an overly optimistic expectation, because again, part of my bias here, but I feel like, what, you know, 17 games, seven more teams, and, you know, here's 1.5% more money, and then an increase to the minimum salaries, which again is not nothing. No one's sitting here saying it's nothing, but it feels like you're the players, you have a real opportunity to get a little bit more from that, and to basically just accept the league's initial proposal just doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense, particularly when you figure out how much bad blood has been between the NFLPA and the NFL over the last 10 years that made this fight seem like it was going to be one that would, you know, come at loggerheads, because the general consensus when the last CBA was signed back in 2011 was that the owners kind of, you know, ran over the players, and the players kind of got worked over a little bit. And certain people, maybe high ranking people of the NFLPA, would like to change that narrative and like to give a little bit more pushback. So it's going to be interesting to see if if this deal does get done. Obviously it has positive ramifications for the Falcons, because how it affects the salary cap. But it is one of those things that if this does get tabled, as I think it will, but again, I don't have any inside information. It just doesn't seem like it's something that should go through, at least in my eyes. It's something that will get tabled through the rest of the year, and then we will get into a 2021 conversation like we did last time and potentially get a lockout. So we'll see how that goes. And maybe the deterrent for the players to avoid a lockout is enough to push this through. But I feel like you can, if you table this, is basically what I'm sitting here saying. Like if in my mind, and again, I don't have inside information, I may be talking out of my butt here, but I feel like you can get greater concessions if you come back to this next February, next March, than what the owners are currently offering. You know, I just feel like you can get a much better counter proposal than what the owners are offering currently. Like maybe that revenue sharing goes up to 49%. Maybe you also get some of these other factors that I'm talking about potentially as well, in addition to whatever the owners are offering right now. So that's sort of my thoughts on that. But let's sort of, you know, turn our attention to how this affects the Falcons, and particularly what a new CBA does to their potential ability to spend come March, should I be wind up looking wrong and this thing does get done before the league year starts on March 18th. But before we get there, I do want to plug the NBA side of the Locked On Podcast Network, where you can find a daily podcast devoted to all 30 NBA teams, including the Atlanta Hawks. Check out the Locked On Hawks podcast hosted by Brad Rowland on your favorite podcast platform, including Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. So if you're a Falcon fan, and the reason why you're hoping that, you know, I'm wrong and that the new CBA gets done is partially because post June 1 cuts come back, although we'll get into this later, but I don't think that's as big a deal as maybe some people are making it out to be. Certainly it affects sort of Devontae Freeman's status, but I don't know how many other players currently on the Falcons it really has a significant impact on. And the main reason why I don't think that's as big a deal, because essentially even though you add that possibility back into the mix, but you don't get to save that money until June 2nd. So it doesn't really affect your offseason, at least in the offseason as we see in the next March and April, when the vast, you know, 97% of all roster moves are made. So I think really where it affects you is it gets rid of the 30% rule. And that's something that we've talked about quite a bit over the last several weeks on this podcast, and talked about how it's kind of being restrictive to some of the things that the Falcons can do when it comes to renegotiating, restructuring contracts, as well as but the potential to sign certain players. And for those of you that don't know what that 30% rule means, basically what it is since 2020 is the last year of the current CBA, you basically your non-bonus salary money on your contract can't go up by more than 30%. Whatever you're owed in non-bonus money in 2020 can't go up by more than 30% going into 2021, and subsequently can't increase by that, whatever that difference is, whatever 30% of that is, can't increase by that same amount, more than that same amount in subsequent years in 2022 and beyond. So for example, you know, if a player is due $5 million in non-bonus salary in 2020, 30% of that would be $1.5 million. So the max his non-bonus salary could be in 2021 would be about $6.5 million, which is five plus $1.5 million. And then in 2022, that could only be $8 million. Because again, that's $6.5 plus $1.5 million. And so why that's important and why that matters is because the way that NFL contracts are traditionally structured, they're backloaded. And what backloaded means is that they count a lot more in the further you go along in the contract. So like in a 5-year contract, in years 3, 4, and 5, the salaries go up. And so that's a way that teams can sort of, you know, trick their way around the salary cap, because at that point in time in the contract, usually when the guaranteed money usually runs out after the first, second, or third year of these bigger deals, that you can then cut a guy and get out of the contract. And so the way that the Falcons have traditionally, you know, sort of structured their deals is they like to give out option bonuses and roster bonuses in the second and third year. So it kind of splits the guaranteed money rather than giving it all out in the first year. You get it in over the first 2 or 3 years of your contract. And that's harder to do with the 30% rule. Basically, in a lot of ways, you can't really do it other than just giving out signing bonus. And we'll just use a concrete example to better illustrate what I'm talking about. So let's imagine Austin Hooper, right? Let's say you go out there and you offer Austin Hooper a 5-year, $50 million deal. Part of that deal contract is a $10 million signing bonus. And the way the signing bonus works as far as the salary cap goes, even though a player pockets that immediately in terms of getting a check, as far as the salary cap goes, it gets spread out over the life of the deal. So $10 million over 5 years would be about $2 million per year. And then that $2 million per year plus what the guy's salary, base salary is, would constitute what a player's cap hit is. And so for a just spitballing a potential structure that you could have, under normal circumstances, you could have Austin Hooper have cap hits over a five-year, $50 million deal of $5 million, $7 million, $10 million, $13 million, and $15 million. The way that you would essentially structure that contract is, in reality, because again, back the way contracts are backloaded, what that really works out, instead of it being really a five-year, $50 million deal, it's really like a three-year, $26 million deal, because all the guaranteed money comes in the first 3 years of the contract. And then in year four, the Falcons could get out of it by cutting him with and not have to pay that much of a significant cap penalty, particularly if his production at that point in time has subsided. So when he's counting $13 million against the cap, then the Falcons be like, this is too much for whatever is a 29, 30-year-old Austin Hooper at this point, and let's turn the page and get a younger guy to come in and sort of take his job. Now, the way the 30% rule works is that if you sign Austin Hooper to the same contract, 5 years, $50 million with a $10 million bonus, his cap hits are more likely to be closer to $7 million in the first year, $8.5 million year two, $10 million in year three, $11.5 million in year four, and $13 million in year five. And so really that's more like a three-year, $29.5 million deal, the way that that's structured. So, you know, that's better for the player because he's getting more money up front than he is on the back end. That's not as great for the team. And it's not necessarily a huge issue because basically the difference between these contracts, certainly in year one, is under the 30% rule, Hooper's cap hit is $7 million. Under quote unquote normal circumstances, it would be $5 million. So that's $2 million in cap space that the Falcons are potentially losing in 2020, which, you know, and then it's like another $1.5 million in 2021. So you look at that number, you know, $2 million isn't a huge deal, particularly if you had like $30 or $40 million in salary cap space, you wouldn't care about that. But when you're the Falcons and you're potentially looking at maybe $15 or $20 million in salary cap space, you know, that becomes a much more significant part of your ability to spend this offseason. And it's not to say that $2 million is going to make or break your offseason, but a smart spending team could find a way to use that $2 million to potentially go out there and get like four or five guys on the cheap that could fill four or five holes on your roster, as well as it could potentially make a difference in negotiating with another guy that's getting paid on par with like an Austin Hooper, because that's $2 million more dollars that you can spend up front than necessarily that you would have previously. And it's really more about the cumulative effect of that. Like if it's $2 million for Austin Hooper and $1 million for this other guy and another $2 million for this other player, that starts to add up. And again, due to the 30% rule, if you have a limited amount of spending time, you know, that takes up a much more significant amount of the money that you can spend this offseason. Now, going back to the post-June 1 cut, and this is something that people have focused on quite a bit because of the rumors and reports that Devontae Freeman may be on the outs. And simply, if the Falcons could designate Devontae Freeman as a post-June 1 cut, they would only have to absorb $3 million in dead money in 2020 versus $6 million if they cut him under normal circumstances, assuming the CBA does not get signed. And so that's a significant amount of money. $6 million to pay a guy to not play for your team is a lot of money. You know, that's wasting money. $3 million is a lot more agreeable because that's Luke Stocker money. Like, you don't have a problem throwing away, you know, that's Matt Schaub money type of stuff. So $3 million is not as big a deal to pay in dead money. And so again, that's $3 million more in cap space that you could potentially have. Again, that's cap space in under these circumstances that you would only get in June, not in March. But it is something, it's a lot easier to cut Devontae Freeman as a post June 1 guy. That makes that decision a lot easier if you know that you can spread out that $6 million. Essentially what it's doing is you're taking the $6 million and spreading it out over 2 years. So it would be $3 million this year and $3 million dead money next year, as opposed to taking it all at once like you would do if you cut him normally. Now, I don't think this is as big a deal as people are making it out to be, because again, I don't think you're getting those savings in March. And so it's not really affecting your offseason plans all that much. You can also easily ask Devontae to restructure or take a pay cut, or really what I think to potentially save an equal or greater amount of money than you would by cutting him. So I think really like the ultimate outcome on what the Falcons decide to do with Devontae Freeman, to me, it doesn't really affect things as much as maybe, or at least I don't expect it to affect the Falcons offseason plans as much as maybe some people are out here making it to be, because I think ultimately they're going to wind up drafting a running back regardless. And I think really the only thing that matters when it comes to keeping or cutting Devontae Freeman or asking him to take a pay cut or whatever, if Devontae Freeman's still on the roster at a reduced salary, at the same salary that he's currently set to make, it only means that I think the Falcons will be much more willing to wait until the third or fourth round to take a running back. If he's gone, then I think it's almost a certainty that they will take one into round two, or and possibly even potentially trading up into round one to take a running back. Back into round one, I don't think they'll do it at 16, but certainly I think if, you know, they feel like, oh no, someone's going to snag the running back that's the apple of our eye at pick 29 or something, we'll trade back into round one to get our guy or whatever the case may be. I think that becomes a lot likelier if, you know, Devontae Freeman is cut, depending on how the draft goes. Again, who knows? It's unpredictable. It's crapshoot. So I think that's really all that really matters. So I think the post June 1 cut, while it's going to be something that people are going to talk about, I don't think it really all that matters that much, particularly when it comes to, you know, how this affects the Falcons. But it's certainly something that's interesting in my eyes. So we'll just sort of have to see what happens with the current collecting bargaining agreement, if they get a new CBA done before the league year starts. And again, it's really about the 30% rule, not really the post June 1 cut. So that's really the thing that you should pay attention to. It just getting rid of that 30% rule just basically means the Falcons can be a lot more proactive with how they sort of manipulate their salary cap, in my opinion, and how they structure certain people's contracts, that they can basically, you know, really do some creative things if they really want to. And so we'll see if the new CBA gets done and gives them that flexibility or not, which I, you know, I'm not going to hold my breath, but you know, maybe I'm wrong. Wouldn't be the first time, won't be the last time. So we'll see how that turns out. And probably tomorrow we will talk about Matt Bosher and how he was underrated and how great he was, and talk about all the great memories of him, you know, suplexing dudes and doing his thing. No punter is going to have as much swagger as Matt Bosher, with the exception of maybe Marquette King. So we'll probably talk about that on tomorrow's podcast, unless there's some other big subject that's worthy of discussion. I think we'll get some cuts probably next week or the week after. Part of the reason why the Falcons may wait on some of these cuts is because they want to see how the CBA goes. So that's part of the reason why I think we haven't seen the early February cuts like we've seen in some other off seasons, like we saw last off season with guys. So I think the Falcons are sort of waiting and seeing how these things sort of play out before they make some of their roster moves. So we'll see how they plan to do those things. But certainly combine week kicks up next week, so we will definitely start to turn our attention to the draft, at least for a week before we turn back to free agency when we get into March. So that's something that you guys can look forward to on next week's set of episodes. We'll try to get some guests on here. I know you guys are tired of hearing me talk. We'll get some quote unquote experts to share their thoughts on the various position groups heading that, you know, apply to the Falcons. We'll look at some of the trench guys, as we have already done this offseason, as well as maybe some other positions as well, heading into the combine, to get you guys geared up for that. They changed the rules of the combine, so that's probably going to be something that we'll talk about. It means that we can watch the combine now in primetime, which I'm happy, because now I don't feel as guilty on the days when certain positions work out that I try to take off from work so I can watch the pass rushers. That's a positive, but it probably means I'll get less sleep because I'll be up late at night and, you know, watching that stuff. But anyway, that's my own personal issues. Lack of sleep is something that is just part of this gig, I guess. So the sacrifices I make for you guys to provide you guys with these great content. I'm rambling at this point in time. So guys, I appreciate you guys for tuning in. We'll be back tomorrow, probably talking about Matt Bosher, but we'll see. Until then.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.